It's the Kim Monson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
I find that it takes work to get your brain around these ideas, and it takes work to engage in these conversations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
With what is happening down at the State House, I used to think that it was above my pay grade to read the legislation, and it's not.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
I see big danger in as much as we will be giving an unelected bureaucrat the power to make rules about what we inject into our body.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the show. This is Kim Monson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Monson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. We'll keep you apprised of all the upcoming guests, as well as we've got these great op-eds, our Sounding Off with Kim Monson podcast, all kinds of great stuff there. And go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. You can email me at kim@kimmonson.com. As well, we've got a great show planned for you today. We'll go through some headlines in this first segment. Second segment, Colorado Representative Tim Geithner put forth a bill. It's House Bill 2014-25. Had bipartisan support, which that is an amazing thing here in Colorado right now. But it basically, what it said is no one should die alone. You know, we're hearing these stories of people that have gone into hospitals during this COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption, and they have died without their loved ones there. And so this is a really good bill, and it did pass, but interesting, there were 17 Democrats that voted against it. So we wanted to chat with him a little bit about that. And then in segments three and four, I know two Jason McBrides, Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management, which is our valued sponsor, and then Jason McBride with the Gang Recovery and Support Program. And we had posted something about Denver Public Schools taking SROs, school resource officers, off of campus. And Jason had responded with grasp. He had responded that he thought that was a terrible idea. So we're going to get him on and ask him why he thinks that is a terrible idea. So want to say welcome to all of you listeners. You're all treasured, valued. You have a purpose. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And thank you to this great team that I get to work with, producer Steve, Keith, Zach, Patty, and Charlie. So, producer Steve, how are you doing this morning?
A little frazzled. I rolled out of the garage this morning, and the first thing I do is turn on KLZ 560, and there was nothing there. It's like, okay, it's going to be
okay,
10
so
to 12
minutes.
Okay, so
you knew that it's going to get interesting when you get there.
I think it's 10 to 12 minutes to the station and all this dead air. And so we have a little bit of an issue here, but as long as we're local and live, we're fine.
Okay, so yeah, that's a great way to start the day. So yes, we're on, and that's important. And so I know you've got a lot of different moving parts over there, Steve. I really appreciate you for everything, though. My friends, as we look at these issues, we look at them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And we have seen these politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties that want to have control over our lives are using fear to take away our civil rights. And it is astonishing that because of that, we've seen people that basically just kind of thrown all of our civil rights or many of our civil rights into the laps of these people, these politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties that want power over our lives. And so that's why we need to understand these issues and to be pushing back on them, because socialism ultimately comes down to force. And it is never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihoods via force, whether it's with a weapon, policy, or unpredictable and excessive taxation, or fear. If something is a good idea, then you should not need to have force to implement it. And so our inspiration for today is from Frederick Douglass. He was an American social reformer. He was an abolitionist, an orator, writer, and statesman. After escaping from slavery in Maryland, he became a national leader of the abolitionist movement in Massachusetts and New York, gaining note for his oratory and incisive anti-slavery writings. He was born in 1818. He died in 1895. And this is what he said. He said, "Where justice is denied, where poverty is enforced, where ignorance prevails, fails, and where any one class is made to feel that society is an organized conceit to oppress, rob, or degrade them. Neither persons nor property will be safe. And that's Frederick Douglass. Very insightful, Steve.
It is, and
Steve must be working on some other things here.
No, he's here.
I'm going to go ahead and go into
He's here. We got a little bit of delay on the link, so
okay, you're there. Okay,
be patient.
Okay, it's a Monday on a Thursday, so a couple of things. First of all, I wanted to just mention, and that is that I saw Reggie Carr and Johnny Thomas yesterday evening. And as you know, they are working on getting this very impressive bus up and running. We're helping them raise the money to put this vinyl wrap around this bus. It's an I'm a Trumpster bus. It'll have a picture of Trump and then the two guys on the side. They're going to be taking this into minority communities. And they have funded this whole I'm a Trumpster 98% with their own money. They've been in the entertainment business for many years, and they are truly on the Trump train here and are doing everything they can to get him reelected. And one of the things is to move the minority vote to show that, you know, the minorities were doing better and better under Trump. There was record low unemployment in the minority communities, record low unemployment in the women. It was just amazing before we got derailed from this whole COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption. And my gosh, you have to look at some of these headlines and you have to wonder, you know, why do these folks not want to get our economy up and going again? And so anyway, Reggie and Johnny, they are working on this. We need to help them raise $10,000 for this bus. And thank you to all of you that are contributing. Keep that coming and go to imatrumpster.com to contribute, and then email me kim@kimmunson.com as well so that we can keep track of that. And then after the 4th of July sometime, we're still working on the date, we're going to have a big party for the bus as well. So it's going to be a party for the bus instead of a party bus, Steve.
Okay, that's a good way to look at it.
Okay, we're going to jump into this headline. When Patty sent this over to me yesterday, I about fell off my chair. This is from the Western Journal, and it says, a county institutes a mask mandate that only applies to white people. Now, I didn't know that the virus could tell between, you know, the different races. But apparently, I don't think the virus really can, but I think that... you know, these social justice warriors who say that they are for social justice, in fact, they're bigots. I mean, look at this. It says, when it comes to science versus social justice wins hands down. That's the lesson from one Oregon county where a directive requiring all residents 12 and over to wear masks in indoor settings outside the home or outdoors when they will be near others, includes one glaring exception that has nothing to do with social distancing or the coronavirus infection. People of color get a pass. In coastal Lincoln County, Oregon, a directive issued by the health department, unelected bureaucrats, Wednesday specifically exempts non-Caucasians, referred to as people of color, from wearing masks required of all other county residents if they have heightened concerns about racial profiling and harassment due to wearing face coverings in public. So, for Lincoln County health officials, possibly groundless concerns among some residents about the possible perceptions of others trump the need for gear all other county residents must wear to prevent a potentially deadly infection from spreading. Possibly the most surprising thing about the news is that a local government in the United States of America in 2020 is making such an explicitly race-based policy so shamelessly is that it's hardly surprising at all. It says, liberals pretend to worship science when it comes to infringing on the rights of others, when it involves destroying the global economy for the phantom threat of climate change, for instance, or destroying the national economy to protect against a global health emergency. But when it comes to their own political agendas, science gets shelved without a second thought. It's the same kind of thinking that spurred New York Mayor Bill de Blasio to brush off complaints that his coronavirus lockdown policy shut down First Amendment protected activities for some while allowing them for others. You know, my friends, what is happening here is we are really getting clarity on these issues. We have people that have said that we want to be inclusive. We want to be tolerant. And what we're seeing is that actually they don't. They say they want peace. They don't. And so I guess the great thing about this whole thing is that we are seeing with great clarity what the real agenda here is. Steve, what's your thoughts?
Well, I wonder, I'm contemplating what you're referring to, and then I'm also looking at this story off of Fox News. The gentleman, his name is Hawk Newsom. His title here on this story, he's the Greater New York Black Lives Matter president. But he sat down with Martha McCallum on a one-on-one interview, and he's basically saying, let me find the quote. It's kind of interesting. He says, if the U.S. doesn't give us what we want, then we will burn down this system. So we talk about freedom versus force. The force can come at you from a number of different places.
Well, you know, that's what we see here, is that there are really those that are bent on destroying this country. And instead of looking at the great things about the country, you know, we were talking about, I was talking with somebody yesterday, we're not a perfect country, but it's an excellent, but it's a perfect ideal that all men are created equal with these rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And it's within the socialism, what happens there is they look at people in groups instead of as individuals. You know, and we see that in socialism all the time. You saw that in Nazi Germany. They started to look at people as gypsies or as Jews or as homosexuals. And they let all those things define them. Polish, you know, all these different things, they would define them as a group. And then when you no longer see people as individuals but see them as a group, then somehow something changes, I think, in people's minds. And they think it's okay to attack anybody that's in that group because they don't like that group. That's the narrative that has been pushed out there. And it's a very dangerous narrative. And so, my friends, we're in a really unique time here in America. And one other point I wanted to make, because you brought up Black Lives Matter, is I think most everybody knows, but just do this. If you go to Black Lives Matter, the website, and you click on donate, what comes up where it goes to is Act Blue. Act Blue is the big Democrat fundraising arm. They've raised over $5.2 billion since 2004. And so, you know, what you're seeing then is, I mean, you have a stark decision to make as you go to the ballot box this next time. And that is we see that the Democrat Party has moved to where they want to destroy instead of build up. So is that what you want? Or do you want to strive for this ideal to lift everybody up? And you do that through liberty, the responsible exercise of freedom. Now, we're not perfect yet, but that's the ideal that we need to be striving for. So let's go to break. Before we do that, though, Hooters Restaurants is one of my valued partners. And last night I had delivery. I had some of their great wings. And they actually can dine in as well. They have 5 Hooters locations, Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. They're open for dine-in, to-go, delivery, and curbside service. Monday through Friday they have the 3 to 6 p.m. is happy hour. And Wednesdays are Wings Day, all the wings you can eat for $15.99. Lunch specials every day, and kids eat free on dine-in or to-go. So go to order.hooters.com for more information. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Representative Tim Geithner, because no one should die alone.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Go over to Facebook and give us a like. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Now, many of you heard Steve Ryder on the show. His wife, Elizabeth, age 40, died alone after over about 20 days in the hospital. And it's a riveting story. You can go back and you can find that on my website. I also did a podcast with him. And it's a riveting story. And it really resonates. No one should die alone. What has happened with this COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption is that people have been dying alone. And so Representative Tim Geithner here in Colorado put together a bipartisan bill, House Bill 2014-25. It's called the Hospital Patient Visitation Rights during COVID-19. But it's to make sure that people do not die alone. So Representative Geithner, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Kim, for having me. I appreciate it.
Tim, these stories I find are absolutely cruel of what has happened. And so tell us your thought process. How did House Bill 2014-25 come to be?
Sure. Happy to do so, Tim. So a friend of mine had actually brought Steve's and Elizabeth's story to my attention. And after that, I actually engaged pretty quickly via text message to Governor Polis, asking for a couple minutes of his time, which he did. He responded to, and we had a conversation and gave him the news article that had appeared in the Colorado Sun. And he was very responsive, and I appreciated all of that to his credit. And it continued to kind of go on the next 24, 48 hours once I was made aware of the story. But it also became apparent that even through executive order, Governor Polis didn't have the authority to, you know, institute any type of a change that would have corrected something that, you know, the writers had found themselves in, that the writers had gone through. And so at that point, what I considered was, well, if there's no opportunity for an executive order or anything like that, then realizing, of course, that Steve had attempted to have a conversation with the hospital and that didn't go in a direction that allowed him to hold his wife's hand or his children to hold his wife's or their mother's hand, policy was the path. And so that's really what 1425 came into being, was through the Ryder family story. But the effort and the purpose of the bill from the beginning, when I spoke to Democrat or Republican alike, was only to have a hand held. That was it. That was the sole purpose, was to ensure that a hand could be held when a loved one was going through some sort of a medical treatment or other, where health was, you know, the focus. That certainly no one should be alone in those times, especially someone that is, you know, could pass from this life.
Now, the title says during COVID-19, but really that should be across the spectrum, that no one should die alone. So how will that work going into the future?
Sure. So unfortunately, the bill as written is not the bill that was that made its way through, or the bill as introduced is not the bill that was voted on by members of the legislature. There was, what was done was a strike below. The strike below actually changed a requirement that the hospital adopt a policy to where a patient could basically have a designee, and the patient could say, you know, whether it be their child, their spouse, their parent, a friend, their loved one, whoever it was that they looked to in those times, would be able to see them, and, you know, following certain protocols, whatever the requirement was for personal protective equipment, the PPE, or other certain things. And so that was the requirement of the bill. The bill actually changed in the strike below, and it became an encouragement. And the word encouragement was used to say that we, as a body, as a legislative body, encourage hospitals to look at this and adopt policies that will allow. And so what was the bill as written had some sort of requirement, had a mandate that said, listen, patients have the right to hold the hand of a loved one. Patients have the right to be with someone, and that they should not die alone. In fact, it even acknowledged that very bit in the bill as introduced, as I wrote the bill. Unfortunately, there were other influences that played out, and those influences were not happy with the bill as written. And so the bill simply now is an encouragement that hospitals will look to adopt policies to ensure that what the writers went through and that other families across Colorado and the nation have gone through don't go through again.
Okay, well, it's a very good encouragement. I find it astonishing that it did not get unanimous support across the board. So the Senate, my understanding is, voted unanimously to pass this. Is that correct, Tim Geithner?
Yes, that is correct. And I was surprised too as I went through this. You know, when I pulled the poll, or when I sat down to work on the bill, to pull the bill, I thought this would be an issue that no one would have any issues with. That they would think, certainly, you know, I think anybody that would desire to hold the hand of their loved one, especially when they are going through, you know, a health procedure or just a troubling health time where anxiety is high, where depression can set in, where uncertainty is there, where perhaps even the ones that aren't necessarily going through the treatment or going through, you know, or being the patient, they're looking to just hold the hand of their loved one because maybe this might be the last opportunity that they'll have. And so I looked at it very much as this one's going to sail right through. There won't be any issues. And boy, was I wrong. and that's really where the strike below
wow.
came in. The strike below actually was what was finally voted on. And even that didn't garner full support by the Democrats. There were, I think, 17 Democrats in the House that voted against 1425. But the committee to hear the bill was very much divided. Democrats were for the strike below by and large. I think we all agreed to it because it was better than nothing and it was a step in the right direction. But I think we all acknowledged, mm-hmm. Even more so on the Republican side, that it was a very big disappointment to realize that the bill as written is not how the bill ended. It was the strike below changed that.
So 17 Democrats in the House voted against this?
Yes.
They're on record as voting against it, huh?
That is correct, yes. And the real test of the bill was there was an effort on the House floor during seconds to not adopt the committee report. The committee report is where the amendment lied, the strike below lied. And so by not adopting the committee report, that means that the bill would go back to its original form as introduced. And that amendment that was attempted to be done, or that a non-adoption of the committee report, was really the most telling and really the most partisan process of the bill, because that was effectively a vote by the Colorado House on the bill as introduced. And it did not garner a lot of support. I think that was Amendment L-002, as it was referred to. But unfortunately, you're right. I was very surprised by the fact that this did not have unanimous support, and that it was not, or and it became very, very quickly what appeared to be a partisan issue.
Gosh, and you would not think that it would be a partisan issue because everyone that I have talked to that has learned of Steve Ryder and Elizabeth Ryder's stories, it just stops them in their track. He thought he was going to bring her home, and instead she died of cardiac arrest. And, you know, loneliness, particularly when you're going through some kind of a health challenge, can be really detrimental. And so Representative Tim Geithner, it's you should call this the compassionate bill, because
sure.
No one should ever die alone. Representative Geithner, thank you so much for doing this.
Sure. Happy to. Thanks for having me, Kim.
Okay. Have a great day. And we're going to jump over here to Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management. How are you doing this morning, Jason?
Well, I'm awake, bright-eyed, and bushy-tailed.
A couple of things. What happened yesterday in the market?
Well, it got its rear end kicked yesterday. The drop was attributed to the increase in coronavirus cases. As you know, they have to find something to attribute it to every day. It might have just been some profit-taking. It looks like we're in for a little bit more damage on the open this morning with the futures down about 200. But, Kim, it's still a long time until the market opens, so things could change.
Well, I tell you, it seems like things change every day. So how bad was it yesterday?
The Dow was down about 700 points yesterday. NASDAQ gave back 222. So we've certainly seen much, much worse days, you know, this year during the throes of the huge correction. But when the Dow takes a 700-point hit, it does kind of open your eyes a little bit, Kim, that's for sure.
Well, and we've talked about that. You know, you'd mentioned that with the market going up, sometimes it's good to sit down and reassess, just risk tolerance, maybe, you know, maybe take a lighten up a little bit. So it's good to sit down and talk with you and your colleagues at Presidential. But in all this, you said that there's some good news. It says there's an improvement to the CARES Act. The IRS is providing relief for waived RMDs. Okay, so what does that mean, Jason?
Well, Kim, I won't go through the whole thing, but it actually is good news. As you remember, the CARES Act waived, made it so you didn't have to take a required minimum distribution this year, so all RMDs were waived. And if you had already taken your RMD, you were allowed to roll it back into your IRA and kind of undo it, you know, if you only took it because you had to. Well, the issue was by the time the CARES Act passed, it was too late for some folks to roll it back in because you still only had the standard 60-day time to roll that over. So, you know, this new IRS notice corrects that. Anybody that took an RMD has all the way up until August 31st of this year to roll it back in, which is good. Also, another piece of this is they said it's all right for folks that have inherited IRAs or beneficiary IRAs. If you've taken an RMD out of one of those, you can also roll that back in all the way up to August 31st. And that's important because, you know, in almost all cases, once you take a distribution from an inherited IRA, you're just plain not allowed to roll it back in. So even if it's an IRA inherited from someone, you've got some more flexibility.
And so people can keep more money in their pocket instead of giving it to the government through taxes. So this is a really great thing. And you have this at our landing page, airpresidential.com, correct?
Yeah, that's right. If you go to airpresidential.com, that's A-I-R, presidential.com, you can request more info on this. We've kind of got it summarized in plain English, but if you enjoy causing yourself pain and brain damage, you can also download the actual IRS, you know, notice on this and read through it completely. So we've got the summary, and then we've got the whole story, Kim. You just go to AIRpresidential.com, get that information, and think about how this might apply to you and whether you want to take your RMD this year or not, because it's nice to have a choice.
It's always nice to have a choice. So again, that is AIRpresidential.com, AIRpresidential.com. Jason, thanks so much. We will talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. Have a good one, Kim.
Okay. Thank you. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, we will be talking with Jason, who is with the Gang Recovery and Support Program, regarding his thoughts about taking the school resource officers out of schools here in the metro area. So we'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can sign up for our weekly email newsletter there. All kinds of great information, our Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcasts, as well as our op-eds. And go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. We'd greatly appreciate that. Now, I know two Jason McBrides. We just talked to Jason McBride, my valued partner with Presidential Wealth Management. And I also know Jason McBride, who is with the Gang Recovery and Support Program here in Denver. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kim, long time. Good to be back.
It's good to chat with you. So first of all, Jason, tell us about GRASP, the Gang Recovery and Support Program.
Well, GRASP has been around about 28 years, and we're Gang Rescue and Support Project.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
No problem.
I knew that. Sorry about that.
We set up about 28 years ago, and it was some former gang members who actually started the program. So Francisco Gallardo, who has since retired, set up the program, and it's a program that helps kids who are having issues with gangs, struggling to get out of gangs, being pressured to join gangs, and we also provide support for kids who've left the life and trying to do something different.
It's a super program, and again, I want to make sure I get that right. It's GRASP, Gang Rescue and Support Program. Have you seen with the whole COVID-19 thing is, you know, I think in some ways people have gotten kind of so focused on that we've forgotten some of these great nonprofits that are doing great work. Have you seen, is anything different, or what's happened with GRASP during all this?
It has definitely been different for us during this pandemic. You know, a lot of my job is reaching out and mentoring and kids that are in facilities, and for me, you can't go into the facilities and visit the kids anymore. So we're able to, you know, get with the kids during, via Zoom. So we have a lot of virtual visits. It's just like any other meetings. A lot of the kids, you know, because I'm in schools all the time, you know, there was no school. So having to, you know, find ways to meet kids, especially when we were on lockdown, and making sure they were okay. And I think one thing that we don't discuss is that some of these kids, especially during the pandemic, were in situations in homes that weren't good for them. You know, parents, you know, a lot of these kids use school as an escape, and not to have that escape was kind of worrying for me in some cases. But we're coming out of that, and things are progressing fine.
Good. Okay. Well, that's good to hear. So if people want to get more information, how can they get more information about GRASP, the Gang Rescue and Support Program?
They can go to our website, graspyouth.org.
Okay. So let's jump over here to this issue that I wanted to talk with you about, and that is the school resource officers that we have in some of our metro schools are police officers that are there. And Denver Public Schools voted to no longer have a school resource officer. I know Boulder Valley Schools voted to do that as well. And I know it was on the docket up in Fort Collins. I'm not sure what the vote is there. But so we posted something, and you said you think that is a bad idea to take school resource officers off of campus. Why do you think that, Jason?
Well, especially at the schools that we're talking about. So I think it's a great point that you mentioned Boulder and Fort Collins. As far as I know, Boulder and Fort Collins schools don't have the issues that the 18 schools that have school resource officers in the Denver Public Schools have. There is a reason that there was a school resource officer placed in the schools that we're talking about in the Denver Public Schools. Those schools had issues with safety, security, a lot of gang issues. So when you talk about removing that element out of schools, just last year, I'll give you an instance. There were at least three, and I'll give you three right now that I just know off the top of my head. Collegian Prep Academy, there was a shooting right outside the door at Collegian Prep Academy last year. 20 minutes later, there were 20 gang members that were on the DSST campus in Green Valley, retaliatory to that. And the next day, there was a shooting outside of MLK Early College in Green Valley also. These were situations that a school resource officer was there, and these things still happened. Don't get me wrong, I love Tay Anderson and everything that he's been doing. I just don't think in this case, especially there was no plan put in place. You know, they just decided to phase these people out, and they didn't put a plan in place. And that's what my concern is, that there's no plan to keep our kids safe now.
Well, yeah, that is a big concern. So are they going to come up with some way? Because kids can't learn if they are not in a safe environment. So is there a creative solution to this?
Well, right now, I think the solution is that something happens just to call the police, which I can't. I'm not comfortable with that. I think there needs to be a plan in place. And I get that, a lot of people feel that having the SRO in schools is basically helping the school to prison pipeline. And I understand that that concern from a lot of parents, but in my line of work and what I deal with on an everyday basis, I'm in these schools every single day. And if we don't have that school resource officer, we're going to be in trouble in a lot of cases.
Okay, so you mentioned a concern, and that is the school to prison pipeline. Is that in the schools that you're talking about, is that pretty prevalent?
Well, and I think that is. There's definitely some concerns with, exposing children in our community to the police because they were getting ticketed, other things that I think the school resource officer isn't necessarily there to do. I think instead of removing these people, and let me say also that a lot of these schools, the parents and the administrators didn't want these people removed, didn't want school resource officers removed from the schools because, for one, these people have great relationships with the faculty and the parents of the community. We have to add that because if you look at Mr. Henry, which is a Officer Henry, which is one of the school resource officers that's been in Montbello for over 20 years. Parents, community love him. Also, there's an officer out at Kepner Beacon Middle School off of Florida and Federal on the west side of town. Parents love him, and for the most part, in the 17 schools, those guys are revered. And so, the school to prison pipeline and writing tickets is something that these school resources officers shouldn't be doing. But I think it's an opportunity for them to engage with kids, get a more positive perception of police in these communities, and build relationships. Highlight law enforcement field. There's not nearly enough black and brown police on our streets. And this is an opportunity for us to do some of those things with the school resource officer. I think we totally need to revamp how he interacts with the kids, but we still need his presence on campus.
So you mentioned tickets. So what kind of tickets are issued on campus?
Well, a lot of these tickets could be for marijuana use or things that that kids should be ticketed for. I totally understand that, but a lot of these things are happening off of campus. And so just keep him on campus and let him worry about the security of the kids. If there are minor infractions or things like that, then we can address those in different ways. But in terms of, you know, him writing summonses and things like that, we shouldn't have him or that person, him or her, in that person, in that role doing that at school.
Yeah, I can see how that could be a problem if you're trying to, you know, create a relationship. Yes. Yeah, I can see.
And that's the most important part is building relationships with the police and these communities. They've suffered for so many years. And I think this is an opportunity, especially in the climate that we're facing right now with everything going on. This is a real opportunity for relationships to be built up in these communities with police, because we need police in these communities. And we need, you know, their protection. So this is an opportunity for them to change, you know, our perception of them, and this is a good way to do it.
Okay. Well, you know what? Let's go to break. I'm talking with Jason McBride with GRASP, the Gang Rescue and Support Program, about school resource officers in our schools, as many of you know. Do you know for sure, did they take the vote in Fort Collins to take the school resource officers off campus as well, or do you happen to know about that, Jason?
I think that, you know, this was voted on, this was you know, being discussed in several school districts. So I don't know what the vote was in Fort Collins. I know that they were discussing taking them off.
Yeah. Okay. 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 Well, let's go to break. When we come back, we'll be right back and continue this important conversation.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, KimMunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. And be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can go over to Facebook and give us a like. Thrilled to have on the line with me, I know two Jason McBrides. Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management and Jason McBride with GRASP, the Gang Rescue and Support Program. And we were talking about taking these school resource officers, which are police officers, off of campuses. So Jason McBride, you mentioned parents that are concerned about the safety of their kids in some of these schools. And what do you think about school choice? Shouldn't a mother be able to get her child out of a school where she's concerned and be able to have her child go someplace that where the child can thrive and flourish? What's your thoughts about school choice?
That's a tough one for me, because I do agree with that. I think all kids should have that opportunity to go to a school that, you know, they feel like they can be successful at. But in saying that, I mean, look at the Republic schools where they're offering that, and most of the parents are opting to enroll their child at East High School, right? And that's decimated. That's decimated the other schools, Montbello, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, all of these other schools that, you know, have made up the New Republic schools are now being turned into charter schools because of the, you know, the population being, you know, basically going to East High School. So I think there's some validity in that. But I think that the solution to that is just making all the schools uniform and you know, with the same curriculum and doing the same things in the same way. There's no reason that if we're talking about one unified school district that any school shouldn't be doing this differently than the other school in terms of curriculum, procedure, and anything else like that. So it just seems like the Denver Public Schools is not as organized as we would need it to be, because we need to, all of our kids that go to these schools need to be offered the same curriculum and opportunities that the other schools are offering, and that's not always the truth.
How can teachers, you know, I know that, you know, and it's across the spectrum, all different neighborhoods, affluent neighborhoods, you know, kids struggle. You know, there's, you know, we hear about teen suicide, which, you know, absolutely is a travesty as well. And so you said something, and I think I'm trying to get my brain around it, is each child is different. Each student is different. And so they can learn differently. But what I think I'm hearing you say is that you would like to have them aspire to the same standards, to, you know, to get out and be able to read and write and do arithmetic and all that. Am I deducing that correctly, Jason?
Yes, I think we need to hold our children up all to the same standards, but our schools also. Our schools need to offer those same, the same curriculum, the same classes to everyone. And I think that just makes a stronger society when we are offering our kids the same things. Like, you know, kids at Cherry Creek have robotics. Well, we need to have robotics at all of our schools to be offered to all of our kids, because all of our kids are just as talented and just as smart. Mm-hmm. We need to revamp the whole redlining thing, so schools in communities that aren't getting that tax money can compete with other schools. And that's where the school choice comes from. And I totally get that. You want your kid to be in the best possible position for their future, and that's putting them in a school that's offering all these different things. And all these schools need to offer all of these different things and put themselves on the same level as any other school. So everything's uniform. Everybody has access to learning the same thing. And we have we're developing future leaders from all of our communities, because they're all learning the same kind of advanced things that are offered in other schools that we are not offering at all of our schools.
So, Jason, I am concerned that kids across the spectrum are not getting, like, basics. Like, for example, just cursive writing. You know, I feel, so what you're talking about, I mean, that's really cool stuff. But I'm not sure that kids, you know, can, you know, read proficiently, that they can, you know, have good penmanship, that they're able to do, you know, math, all these basic things that I got when I was a kid. And it seems to me like we need to make sure that every child gets that. I remember when one of my kids came home after they started to not do cursive, a lot of these young millennials have terrible penmanship. I mean, I think we need to get the basics down, because I think we're letting our kids down if we don't do that.
I totally agree. And one thing I'll say about school in 2020 is that I think we're failing our kids. We're not meeting them on that level. You know, we need to revamp schools, because, I mean, my point is this. If you go back 150 years and, you know, Little House on the Prairie, what do you have? You have a school, you have a teacher with a blackboard and rows of students. And if you go to 2020, you have a teacher, a blackboard, and rows of students. We need to change how our kids are, or how we're teaching our kids, because our kids are different. These kids are growing up with technology and things like that. So if we want to be honest about how we're teaching our kids, we need to meet them on that level. And a lot of these kids are going to schools. Some of them are having outdated textbooks, so they'll leave their home where they have all of this technology, you know, tablets, you know, computer, whatever they need, and they go to school and don't have those things. So how are we going to teach these kids that grow up with technology without the things that they, you know, normally have in their homes? And we're forcing them to learn like we did. We didn't have any of these things growing up. So I think we have to change. And we have to evolve. Education is an evolving thing, and we have to evolve with it. And that's one thing I think we haven't done.
Okay, I'm going to push a little bit on this, Jason. And the reason is, if you go and Google, it's like the eighth grade graduation require a test for in Salina, Kansas. And I would venture to tell you, it used to be they'd say, oh, they only had an eighth grade education. And I heard so many success stories of people back then that had eighth grade educations and went on to have very successful lives. And so I've gone and taken a look at that, and I can't answer all those questions on that particular test. And the other thing that we've done research on is, you know, many of these people out in California, you know, that have made, you know, gazillions of dollars on in these technology companies, they are now sending their kids back to schools where they have a blackboard and, you know, teaching in the old style way. And I find that so interesting that they are trying to get all of our kids, you know, onto all this technology, and yet they are going to, you know, what worked very well, you know, in the past. And so I'm really kind of questioning that, because I think if kids can't read and write and do arithmetic, it doesn't really matter all the technology that people have.
Well, I can see your point, but we have to teach these kids in a way that they know now. And I think if we teach them on some of the things that they had access to, it just makes it easier. And I totally get your point. We need to get back to the basics. We need to make sure that our math, our reading, are proficient with everyone else around the world, which I think we're falling behind.
But we are falling behind.
But I also think that we need to modernize everything that we're doing with our kids. I think, and especially in my community, I think our kids are not responding to that old school method of teaching.
Okay.
And we need to try some different things.
Okay. Now we have about 3 minutes left, and we're talking about standards. And I don't know if you had seen this news headline, but a UCLA accounting professor, apparently there was a, I think it was a white student that requested that students of color have a different off here. Sorry about that. We're having some connection issues. That students of color did not have to achieve the same standards that other students had to. And he said, no, I want to hold them all to the same standard. And there was a big brouhaha about that. We've got just a couple of minutes. What's your thoughts about that, Jason?
That is a tough thing, because, you know, our children in our schools are so far behind. In some of our communities, they're so far behind. So ultimately, I would like all kids to be held accountable to one standard. But we have to keep people up. You know, some of these schools in my community don't have the basics. You know, we don't have libraries. We don't have a lot of things that other schools have. And so I think we need to put everybody on the same playing field. And make schools all standardized, with everyone has access to the same thing. And I think once we do that, we just increase you know, the proficiency, the level of education, and everything that's coming out of my community, and make our kids just as smart as the ones that are in other communities, because they are, and we just need to provide them with those opportunities to prove that.
Okay. Well, you and I agree, every child is valuable, and every child, you know, we want the best for them, and we want to have them have the education where they have the tools to be able to go on and be a success. Jason McBride with GRASP, the Gang Rescue and Support Program, thank you so much. It's really a pleasure to get to chat with you today.
Oh, I love being on, Kim. Thank you.
Okay. You have a great day. And our quote for today is Frederick Douglass. And he said, it is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. Again, it's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. And that's what we want to do. And we want to be able to pass on to the next generation opportunity and this idea that all men are created equal, with these God-given rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So today, my friends, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
Through the mountains climbing, twisting, turning, further from my home.